With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live.
In a secret lab, somewhere in the Western Hemisphere, the perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
Aye, he's a naughty boy indeed. If only you people knew the half of it. But anyway, it's Friday, the 22nd of March, 2024. Yay, it's the weekend. Hope all you people are doing well out there in TNTdom, and the good ship TNT, as we navigate through those turbulent waters of life. And what turbulence we have experienced over the last week or two. But hey, nothing the good ship can't handle. The show is very much still going on. We're putting things into place to improve things even further. And of course, we welcome your presence along for the ride. You can leave us a message in the live chat, tntradio.live. You can check out our website, tntradio.live. Look at what's on, upcoming events. Advertise your own upcoming events. Buy yourself some tasty merchandise. Look at the schedule. That's changing a lot at the minute. Not going to lie, changing a lot, but we're keeping it updated, streamlining things down, and hopefully making for a better listener and viewer experience. So what have we got on the cards today? Well, I'm going to be joined in the first hour by Nick Buckley from Manchester. We're going to have a look at what's happening up in his manor up north in England, and also Basil Valentine will be hopping on for the last part of the first hour. Then in hour number two of Locked and Loaded, I have Sarah Wilkinson joining me for the first time and rounding off the week on a high note with my old musician friend, my old crooning friend, none other than Trevor John. He's going to be joining me as well. So all that is still to come. And of course, as the show goes on, feel free to leave your thoughts, comments, opinions, suggestions, maybe links, maybe even a kind word or two, if you can muster that up. If you can muster up some kindness, dump it in the live chat. There is no bandwidth limit on kindness and niceness and loveliness and compliments and all that business. But anyway, do whatever you want, basically. I don't really give a damn. Only joking, of course. But anyway, coming up in a minute, we'll have Gemma. Before we get there, I want to give props to a guy called Alexander Doba. Last week, I brought the world's attention to the Aztec death whistle. I don't know if you can remember that one or not. No one knew what that was until TNT broke that story. So I want to talk about this dude, Alexander Doba. Now, he's dead. He died about 4 years ago, but you have to know about this guy. He kayaked solo across the Atlantic Ocean, 5,500 kilometers under his own steam power. He paddled his ass across the Atlantic Ocean. Not once, not twice, but three times, okay? And most recently, the last time he did it was in 2017 at the age of 70. Now, I can stand and look at Scotland from where I live, and it's about 17 or 20 miles across the Irish Sea. And the thought of getting in a kayak and even paddling to Scotland tires me out. So, you know, I just look over there. But the thought of hopping in a kayak and paddling to America, not once, not twice, but three times, fair play to the old guy. But he died in 2021 while climbing Kilimanjaro in Africa, which is Africa's highest mountain. And I've passed Kilimanjaro several times, looked up at it, all the tourists wanting to summit that thing. And I thought, no, I'll just keep driving down the Tsavo Highway towards Taveta on the Tanzanian-Kenyan border and cross over there on my nice comfy little, well, it wasn't comfy at all, bus. But anyway, he died in 2021 climbing Kilimanjaro. After reaching the top, he asked for a 2-minute break before pausing for a photograph. He then sat down on a rock and simply died. So what's all this about, Rick? Well, I'm just thinking about this guy. He died, I would say, happy. And he died in the pursuit of doing something that he loved. He was out in the wilds of Africa. He was climbing Kilimanjaro, you know, had to get a selfie in, of course, before he died, because it wouldn't be modern times without taking a selfie. Even old Alexander Dobba wanted one on top of Kilimanjaro. But the moral of the story is, get out there if you can, live life a little bit more, do things that put a smile on your face, do crazy things, attempt crazy things. And you know, if you're going to die, die with your boots on, or in this case, this guy's case is hiking boots on, up on top of old Mount Kilimanjaro. I don't know if they brought him down or where he was buried, but there's a picture of him here standing, and he's a wizened old guy, but really, really muscular, eating a can of beans, cold beans, with a spoon. But he's got this big grin on his face as the tomato ketchup disgustingly merges with his long, white, straggly, grey beard. But anyway, Alexander Dobba, I know it's not today's news, but I'm talking about it anyway because I like this old guy. Never met him, but I like him, you know. I think he's crazy as a bag of squirrels, but I like him, and I like crazy people. Maybe that's why I like TNT so much. I love you people in the live chat. You're mad as a bag of squirrels. And speaking of madness and bags of squirrels, we're going to bring Gemma on in just a second, and she's going to tell us what's making the headlines today. So don't go away. This is TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
So does that motivate you to run out after the show, get yourself a kayak, stock up on some Heinz baked beans, get yourself a big paddle and start heading towards America? Huh?
Well, before we get to that, I'm just slightly concerned of the inference of that introduction of mad as a bag of squirrels. Let's go and get Gemma. Now, you wouldn't be the first person to call me mad, but I'm surprised it's happened on TNT because I kind of feel like I fit right in here with everybody.
When you make it 2 years, when I hit my 2 year anniversary, I was sent a golden straitjacket. So you'll be getting yours in about 18 months' time. So that's something for you to look forward to.
Well, let's go back to old Alexander. I mean, why not? You've got your one precious life in this incarnation, and create it for yourself. I mean, I have been trying to do that and rail against the system, and at times it hasn't gone too well for me. Hence, I'm here at TNT. You know, the Matrix firmly spat me out. But at least I'm being authentic, and I think that's the key. You don't have to climb Kilimanjaro unless you want to, or kayak across the Atlantic 3 times. You can just do anything you want in your normal day-to-day existence. That means that you are living your authentic self. Your inner self is guiding you, not the external reality that everybody wants you to subscribe to. I think that's the key. No matter how crazy it looks to anyone else, if you're walking to the beat of your own drum, you're living your best life, and that's it. And it's the little things that make your life, not the big things.
Yeah, and that, you're right. You know, you don't have to do what's big in his eyes, or what's you know, a huge achievement in his eyes. Maybe not something we even would give the time of day to. Maybe our goal is simply to get through the day, or, you know, to put a smile on somebody's face, or just breathe a little bit more fresh air and spend a little bit less time in front of a computer screen. Whatever your goals are your goals, and they're the most important goals for you. Just before, actually, I've seen something that popped up on the news feed here this morning. This celebrity, you know, that celebrity doctor, Dr. Rachel Clark, she's a spokeswoman for the NHS, one of this Blue Heart Brigade. She's been moaning and wailing and weeping and gnashing her teeth this morning, talking about the Royal College of Physicians. So she'd been invited to speak to them. Why? I don't know. They'd probably be better getting someone like me to speak to them, even though I have no medical qualifications per se, probably know more about taking care of humans than Rachel Clark does. But she's been the Royal College of Physicians has been forced by its fellows to hold an extraordinary general meeting, only the third in its 500-year existence. So fellows were appalled at the college's key role in driving through the government's plans to replace doctors with cheaper substitutes, and they're labeled PAs, or physician alternatives, right? So they're not actually doctors, but they kind of look like doctors and talk like doctors, but they're not doctors. So her words, doctors like me, yeah, the Grim Reaper, doctors like me are deeply concerned about the risks to patient safety of replacing doctors with physician associates. One heartbreaking example is a young woman who died from a blood clot missed by a PA. Isn't it rich that she's bemoaning patients dying at the hands of physician alternatives and not even acknowledging the thousands of patients that have been died and neglected and the millions sitting on the NHS waiting list, waiting to see a real doctor like her rather than a PA. I would actually take my chances equal with a so-called PA than any white-coated stethoscope wearing doctor in the NHS. What do you think? Has she got a brass neck, this woman, Rachel Clark?
She certainly has. I mean, she's the doctor on which that recent ITV drama, Breathless, supposedly the most accurate portrayal of the scamdemic, you know, based on her work, her book. She has got a brass neck. But isn't it funny, Rick? How many, what's the word, PAs, physician, what's the second word?
Physician alternatives.
Think how many physician alternatives there were in the last 4 years. All the celebrities that were physician alternatives, all the footballers, footballing pundits, so people like Alan Shearer in the UK, actors, Sir Michael Caine, they were all physician alternatives. Elton John telling us to get the jab. There were millions of physician alternatives. Our next door neighbours were physician alternatives telling us what to do with our own bodies. I mean, it's an absolute travesty that she can even come out and say that. And look where it's got us. I mean, we're on the fourth anniversary, or eve of the fourth anniversary of lockdown and everything it's left in its horrible wake. And she's got, like you say, the brass neck, but she's a sort, that one, as we say in the UK. She's a sort, and not in a good way, Rachel Clark, craving the limelight, so busy and stressed out during the scamdemic, she had time to keep a diary. That's what politicians do because they've got one eye on the future. They know it's going to be published. Complete narcissist, completely up herself. She should stay well away from saying anything because that ITV drama, Breathless, it got a huge backlash from people like us. And it didn't go too well for ITV. They've misjudged the room because so much has changed in the last 4 years. But yeah, physician alternative, you know where you can stick that one, Rachel Clark.
Oh, indeed. Stick it in your pipe and smoke it. But of course, you wouldn't do that because you're a scrupulous person of impeccable moral character and, of course, a real doctor rather than a PA. And interestingly, just 4 years since the lockdown was the anniversary's coming up, or on the eve of it, that's the last time I had to sit in an office and have my brain cells slowly destroyed. So in a way, all the tragedy that's happened off the back of it, TNT was born or spawned off the back of the scamdemic. We all came together off the back of it, despite all the other terrible, horrific miscarriages of justice and destruction that's been done. One silver lining to that very, very black cloud was at least we came up. And as in collectively the station, the people listen to it, the people that are working for it. And yeah, we're still going 2 years and 3 months later, 2 years and 2 months later. So yeah, long, long live TNT. But anyway, sorry for meandering all over the place this morning. What's on the old headline front this morning, Gemma?
Well, within the last hour, West Yorkshire Police here in the UK have confirmed that they are now investigating top Tory donors' comments, allegedly racist comments about the Black MP, Diane Abbott. West Yorkshire Police say they are working now to establish the facts and decide whether a crime has been committed. It's obviously relating to Frank Hester, who gave the Tory party more than 10 million in funds last year. But he said that watching Diane Abbott on television made him want to hate all black women and that she should be shot. So the police are now investigating that. Also, a £24 million border control unit on England's south coast may well have to be closed because post-Brexit border arrangements have left it commercially unviable and not fit for purpose. The facilities at Portsmouth Harbour, paid for entirely by the taxpayer, but is likely to be closed with only half the building ever being used, Rick. And other ports around the UK now face the same fate, ports paid for by the taxpayer. Hospital bosses in the UK are warning that there may well be another Lucy Letby-style baby killer scandal unless whistleblowers are afforded more protection. Their warnings come ahead of a debate today on strengthening whistleblower legislation. That debate will take place in the UK House of Commons. And Fishy Rishi Sunak, he's on the campaign trail. He's heading out to help people vote Conservative in the local elections. I can't stop smiling while I'm reading that. But he's gone into Derbyshire, into the Midlands, to convince people that voting Tory is the right thing to do on May the 2nd.
Oh, my goodness. He would serve the Tory party well if he just stayed in number 10. I mean, can you just see him waltzing around, you know, a housing estate, rapping on doors with that fake grin on his face, probably no coat on, sleeves rolled halfway up, his little top button undone and his drain pipe trousers and those skinny little legs of his. I don't know, it wouldn't exactly inspire me to whip out the pencil, run down to my local polling station and put a big fat axe beside my local Tory representative. But yeah, good luck with that, Rishi. And no doubt he'll probably claim expenses for doing it. In fact, Gemma, we shouldn't be laughing and smiling because we're going to pay for that trip of his indirectly through our taxes. And by the way, I hope you remembered to look up a good accountant like I asked you to the other day, because, you know, you don't want him knocking on your door. You don't want the Inland Revenue knocking on your door. That's even worse than Rishi Sunak, if that's even possible. So we've got to put a semicolon on our conversation, not a full stop. We're pausing, and we shall pick it up again in the second hour of Locked and Loaded. But big thanks to you in the meantime, Gemma, for bringing those headlines to us. We'll be back after this short break with Nick Buckley from Manchester, way up north where it's grim. So we're going to be talking to him about what's happening in his neck of the woods very shortly here on TNT.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez, and normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, very happy to be joined for a second appearance on TNT this morning. None other than Nick Buckley, MBE. He is an independent candidate for the mayor of Greater Manchester. I don't know why, but I was corrected a few times at the start of this year. I kept referring to chaps like you as Lord Mayor candidates. I don't know where, because we've got a little town near where I live, and the dude that's responsible for running it is called the Lord Mayor, but it's the Mayor for Greater Manchester. Hard to believe a couple of months has passed since we last spoke, and you're that much closer to maybe getting that position that you're after. How's life with you up in Manchester, Nick?
I'm great. Everything's great. The election is 6 weeks yesterday. So less than 6 weeks now to go. And I've been campaigning for a year. So it's gone really, really quickly.
Excellent. Well, just before you came on there, Gemma Cooper, our news correspondent, was telling us about Rishi Sunak is out rapping doors at the minute in Derbyshire, I believe, trying to rustle up a little bit of interest in the Tory party. Has Rishi left it a little bit late for his door knocking antics, given that, in your own words, you've actually been on the campaign trail for the best part of a year now. Mm. And obviously you still have another 6 weeks to go. So you've been working hard at this for quite some time. You know, is Rishi just doing a Johnny come lately, doing a few token door knocks, not really putting any real effort behind this? It's just a symbolic gesture rather than an actual labor of love on his part.
I don't think it matters if he means or if he doesn't mean it. They haven't got a chance in hell of being elected again in the next general election. The Tories are over, and rightly so. 14 years in power have achieved absolutely nothing. And it's worse than that. It's not that they haven't achieved anything. The country is so much worse than it was 14 years ago. And that is all down to the Tories.
Mm-hmm. And even in the last, we're talking also just before you came on, Nick, it's roughly the fourth anniversary of when the lockdowns first kicked in. And of course, everybody was sent home, given furlough money. They started printing money at the time. I believe Rishi Sunak was the chancellor. They said he had a magic money tree in number 11. He was just printing billions, spaffing it away on PPE equipment on lockdowns, $37 billion spent on the NHS's track and trace device or application that was supposed to notify someone if you're standing beside someone that had the cold. So they've done a lot of damage, in particular in the last 4 years. But over the last 14 years, without a shadow of a doubt, some of the indicators aren't good. You put a post up on your Twitter page, which is at Nick Buckley, MBE, Conservative mayoral candidate jumps off the dying Tory ship and is saved by Reform UK. Swap one set of puppet masters for another set. Imagine what greater Manchester could be if we rejected the Tories, Labour and the great pretender. That is Reform. Yes, Reform aren't getting a whole lot of love either. They're trying to be a, you know, everything to everybody. You know, where do they actually stand on anything? And if ex-Tories are defecting over to them, it doesn't exactly bode well for their future, does it?
Not at all. I understand why they did what they did. So Reform have got some good PR out of it. Look at the mayoral candidate. The Tory candidates jumped to us. They've damaged the Tory party a bit more, and that's their job. I understand why they've done it, but they've actually damaged our political system a little bit more in the UK, because we're looking at this now and we're going, there's a Tory candidate who only a few days ago was on social media talking about how wonderful the Tory party is, and he's fighting for the Tory party and we're the future. And now we know he didn't mean any of it. So we just keep damaging our institution, our political institution, by these career politicians who don't care about the country, don't care about what policies they have. It's all about, am I more likely to get voted in? Am I more likely to get more votes? Because that's all I care about. And this is damaging our trust in our political system. And we can't go on like this, keep damaging and damaging politics in this country. We need someone to come through who will start building a little bit of trust in our political systems. Otherwise, it's going to lead to anarchy.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, there's definitely a shift happening at the minute, whether or not you're a follower of politics or not. I think the general consensus everywhere is that the current system is broken beyond repair, and a new Labour Party or a new Tory party won't be enough to fix the damage that's actually been done. The board needs to be wiped completely clean. The slate needs to be wiped completely. And if anybody's going to replace those people that are currently allegedly governing our country, it has to be independent candidates or small independent parties. This current system of, you know, Tory and Labour, there is no opposition. They're both two wings of the same bird, or two cheeks of the same backside, as George Galloway would describe them. And of course, he had a massive victory recently in Rochdale. And in fact, he was bandying about the idea, I don't know if he was serious or not about it, about running as mayoral candidate for Manchester as well. So, you know, I don't know if there's any truth in that, or if he was just having a little bit of a troll there, or maybe he was serious. What do you think? Do you think you could even see him taking that hat of his off and literally throwing it into the ring for vying for the same spot that you're going for?
I can't see him doing it personally, because for him to do it personally, he would have to resign as an MP. Mm-hmm. And then if he doesn't win the mayoralship, he's back to square one and hasn't got a position in politics. I can see him standing somebody from his party to challenge Andy Burnham, and he would give it, you know, 110%, and George Galloway would be the face of the campaign. Mm-hmm. I can see that happening. But going back to the Tory candidate in Reform, Reform are turning into exactly what they say they despise. How do we get reform of our politics in our country when the party called Reform just constantly recruit all the failed Labour and Tory politicians. It's like, that isn't reform. That's just the status quo. The same pawns on the same chessboard just being moved around. It's like a magic trick. A magician will let you pick a card and you think you're picking an unknown card, but he's making you pick the card he wants you to pick, and he knows what that card is.
We've got to take a little headline break right now, and when we do, when we come back at the other side, let's look at the imminent exit of old Andy Burnham, what his legacy was, and let's hypothetically say, okay, well then, Nick Buckley, you think you could do a better job, how will you do that? Let's look at what your manifesto is, and let's look at how you would run Manchester or govern Manchester if you were in that position yourself. So please stay tuned for that. Leave any thoughts, comments, questions and opinions in the live chat, tntradio.live, and we'll be right back here. Don't go away.
I got news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Poland continues to fan the flames of war, this time accusing Russia of preparing a full-scale attack against NATO. Estonia's also jumped on the wagon, urging NATO to defy warnings from Moscow and accept Kyiv into the US-led alliance as soon as possible. And Indonesia's defence minister has pledged to be a president for all Indonesians after the final results of last month's election were released, affirming his resounding victory.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, because we're uncensored here on TNT, we were able to use the B word without any fear of retribution here. And I don't mean that word, but I mean the B word being Burnham, the Burnham word. Andy Burnham, mayor of Manchester. I can remember first seeing him during the lockdowns where he was, telling us that the North was being really done bad, especially with the lockdowns. Businesses were failing. He was getting himself into a right old lather about it. Seemed to be getting some good publicity out of it, but then it all went a little bit sour over the last few years. What will Burnham's legacy actually be, Nick? And, he's out. He's going out. The person that's coming in, let's assume it's you. What would you do differently or better than Burnham did?
So what we've learned from Andy Burnham is the job is only part-time, because recently he's had spare time to write a book and get it published, and he spends half his time going on about Everton Football Club and points being deducted by the Premiership League. So we know the job's only part-time, which I'm happy about. It means I can have more holidays if I become mayor. What's his legacy? He hasn't got a legacy. He thought his legacy was going to be the clean air zone, about cleaning up the air in Greater Manchester and charging people to drive. But that's all been cancelled now because the people said, no, we're not having this, mayor. So he lost his bottle and he's changed all that. He's now hoping his legacy will be the B network, all our new yellow buses driving around Greater Manchester. So he's reduced the fares and he's now taken control of the buses for the first time in 40 years. But what the people don't know is he has 3 years to increase passenger numbers by 30%. And if he doesn't, the project goes bankrupt. So we could end up with no buses in 3 years' time. That could be his legacy. But his real legacy is going to be how he used Greater Manchester Mayor to springboard himself back into Parliament and become Prime Minister. That will be his real legacy.
Well, tell me this then. So is there a possibility, I'm not sure how the mayoral system works, obviously, in Manchester, but is there a possibility that he could get elected again, or does he have to step aside, or is the chances of him getting re-elected literally the same as, the like of George Galloway going for the position? Of course he could, but if he does, then he'll have to resign as PM. So is there a chance, is there a snowball's chance in hell, as they say, of Andy Burnham going for this and getting re-elected again?
Yes, he's still the favourite by a long shot. So the Tory vote has collapsed over years. The Tories are not challenging for the seat, hence why their candidate jumped ship. Reform won't win. It's Andy Burnham's seat to lose, basically. So if something happens between now and then, like George Galloway standing, a new story that damages vote even further. He's not as popular as he was 3 years ago, but common sense tells me he'll probably win again. Which is a shame, because he's already had 7 years And believe me, nothing in Greater Manchester has got better. Absolutely nothing has got better. Crime's out of control. It's like the rest of the country. It's all going downhill. And we're going to give him another 3 years because he can change Manchester in 10 years. 7 years wasn't enough. How long do we give the man?
Do you know what? That's I'm not saying this. I don't mean it to come across as in a negative way, but it's almost like the people of Manchester, I don't know if they realize this or not, but there's a psychological condition called Stockholm syndrome. You know, that's where you can be kidnapped by someone and held captive, but actually start to develop an emotional bond with your abuser or your captor. And it's not just, I'm not knocking the people of Manchester. We have a lot of listeners from Manchester. I'm saying, on the whole, we saw this happening in Australia as well. We saw it happening in New Zealand. After all the lockdowns that Australia had, for example, their two worst areas were Victoria and Western Australia. And their so-called premiers at the time was Mark McGowan and also a loathsome toad of a man by the name of Dan Andrews. But when it came time for the polls to open again, after they'd abused their constituents, locked them down, put a lot of them out of business, bankrupted them and sacked them because they wouldn't take the jabs, those people were actually successful in further subsequent elections. So I don't know what you can do about that. I don't know if that's a mindset that can't be cracked, but I know you're doing your damnedest to do that. You have a website. I just want to direct people your way as well. It's Nick Buckley for number4mayor.co.uk. And you also have, how would you say it? You've put up a manifesto. So just in the next, 3 or 4 minutes, the little time that we have left, Nick, I'm undecided. You knock my door. You're doing some canvassing. I'm living in Greater Manchester. And I say, well, what sets you apart from Burnham? Why should I believe you? Sure, all you guys are all the same. You're only out for your best interests. Why should I vote for you? What's your answer to that?
My answer would be you're perfectly correct. Everyone is out for themselves. That's why I'm standing as independent, because I don't want to have a puppet master. I don't want to be voted in and then be told what to do by the people in Westminster because they're my bosses. Hence why I'm an independent. My three main policies are fix the police. Our police are failing in Greater Manchester. Mm-hmm. You're more likely to be stabbed and murdered today than 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. You're more likely to have police officers knock on your door and tell you off about hurty words online. I want police officers hammering criminals every single day, and I make no apology for that. I'll be fixing Greater Manchester Police. I'll be turning them back into a police force, not a pink and fluffy pink service. Mm-hmm. That's my first point. My second point is I love my car, and I want you to keep your car. That's why I say no to the clean air zone, to ULEZ, to no traffic neighbourhoods, to congestion charges, to pay per mile, to 15-minute cities. If I'm mayor, all those projects are scraps. I will never implement a project like that. I'll go one step further. I'm going to take the cameras down because I don't want the mayor after me flicking a switch and implementing a clean air zone. I'm even going to appoint a motoring czar who will highlight any projects coming down the line from the councils that are going to attack drivers. I want an early warning system to make sure we're not in this situation again. And my last policy will be I need to improve all the public services. How do I do that? Well, I do that by naming and shaming top civil servants who are incompetent, who waste our money, who provide poor services. Because I can't change these services, the mayor doesn't have power. But I can stand in front of the press and go, Joe Bloggs from such a council has just wasted £500,000 on this project that doesn't work, that you're paying for. And unless we give the people the information and the names of people, that's really important. Mm-hmm. We need to hold them accountable. I want to give top civil servants skin in the game. So my campaign really is about doing the foundational work, because I want to do the heavy lifting today and fix the problems we've got so people who come after me can then create some wonderful projects and improve everyone's lives. But you can't do that when our foundations are crumbling.
Yeah, that's a very good summary there. So there's three main points. Police, sort the police force, turn them from a police farce in the police force. Number two is the motorist, because obviously everybody loves their cars, really. It's a way to be independent, way to get about, but motorists are being cracked over the head left, right and centre. So scrap the clean air zones, take the cameras down, and then the public services, because another thing that we cover a lot on here, Nick, right across the UK and Ireland, is this business of council tax, or rates as they call it in Northern Ireland, people paying thousands, 3-4 grand a year for services. And, you know, yeah. always about potholes. There's always the potholes. You might get your bins emptied if you're lucky every week or every 2 weeks, but a lot of people are scratching their heads. And then, of course, a lot of councils are going bust as well. Birmingham Council has been declared bankrupt. Leicester Council, so many councils are in dire straits financially, despite all this money that's been pumped into them, and despite the fact that there's no visible improvement in the infrastructures of the area. So three very key points there that you've touched on, that if they're not going to be vote winners for you, I don't know what is, because certainly the people that I have on here are very disgruntled with the police, state of policing, very disgruntled with the attack on their pockets of their motorists, and very disgruntled with the way that their money's being spent by their local councils and services. So just to wrap it up, I want to direct people, there's a website, Democracy3, democracy3three.org. And on that, you can read up a little bit more about what Nick's visions are going ahead. And of course, if possible, you can follow him if you use the platform on Twitter or X at Nick Buckley, MBE, on his website, nickbuckleyformayor.co.uk. And it's 6 weeks out. I think it's been about 6 or 8 weeks since we last spoke. So we'll try and get you back on again before those elections actually happen, and say 5 weeks' time, just to give you one last little push before the elections actually happen. But in the meantime, big thanks to you for taking time out of your morning this morning, Nick Buckley, Nick Buckley for Mayor. And you never know, I could be talking to the next Mayor of Manchester in about 6 weeks' time. Only time will tell. So big thanks to you, mate, and I hope you have a splendid weekend, and all the best with your campaigning. We'll be back after this short break with Basil Valentine. Don't go away. Stay tuned for more Locked and Loaded on TNT, today's news talk.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
I'm Belinda, and this is Willard, and we were adopted in 2021. When we first met Todd, he was singing a song, and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest smile, and he has a big heart to match.
The energy you give Todd, you get it back from Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's a joy.
Yes,
Todd's
he is.
Todd really is a great joy.
I love him. You and you.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Informative and engaging.
Rick Munn.
Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, it's TNT, today's News Talk. It's Friday, the 22nd of March, 2024. TNT's very own political editor, Basil Valentine, is in the house. A lot to talk about before the top of the hour. We're looking for a slow news day. We ain't going to get one this week, I fear, Basil. Certainly a lot happening even this morning in the UK and Ireland as well. As you cast your eye over today's happenings, what is catching that eye of yours?
Good morning, Rick, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. Yes, UK, Ireland, and of course the European Council meeting in Brussels, where the drums of war seem to beat ever louder. But first, I've got a quick question for you. Who is Simon Harris? Well, it sounds like somebody one might have gone to school with. In fact, I know someone called Simon Harris. I think pretty much everyone knows someone called Simon Harris. But in the context of Irish politics, who is Simon Harris? Any idea, Rick?
He's one of these people that's been lurking in the wings. You know, Leo Varadkar's hung up his boots, his political boots this week from Fine Gael. And obviously that sparked a potential leadership race or who's going to be taking over from Varadkar. There's been some names thrown out there that people are very familiar with. Basil, one in particular, Helen McEntee, who I believe is the great nemesis of the Irish people, the so-called justice minister. Eamon Ryan's name's been thrown in there. Simon Harris's name's been thrown in there. He's not someone one that I've had to, cast too much attention on in the last 6 to 8 months, because there's too many other ghouls and rogues before him in the pecking order when it comes to destroying Ireland. But that is a good question. Simon Harris, what do we actually know about him? Apart from everybody knows a Simon Harris, what is the word in the street concerning him?
Well, this particular Simon Harris is aged just 37, and he dropped out of college to enter politics and became a member of the Dáil, the Irish Parliament, at the tender age of 24. He confirmed late last night that he's a candidate, but even before that, he had received the endorsement of no fewer than 24 of the 54 members of the Dáil belonging to Fine Gael, his party. Mm-hmm. So almost half of the MPs had endorsed him before he even decided to run, meaning that it looks like it could well be another coronation. Fine Gael operates an electoral college system for the election of its new leaders, with the vast majority of the percentage in the electoral college going to the MPs, 60%, I think. And then there's smaller allocations for constituency parties and councillors. So if he gets over half the members of the Dáil supporting him, then it looks almost certain that he will be the new Irish Prime Minister at the age of 37. If I was a betting man, and you know I am, Rick, that's where my money would be going. I'm declaring I'm in and I intend to give this my all, he told RTE. Whether there is a contest or not, I will be approaching this with vigour and energy. I will be listening to members across the country. The others, Simon Coveney, Helen McEntee, who you mentioned, looks like they face an uphill struggle. Paul Cunningham of RTE, their political editor, said, I think it's over. There is the capacity for tenders to come forward until Monday, but with Donoghue out of the race, it's hard to see how anyone is going to stand against Harris. It's rather like Rishi Sunak's coronation. Whatever happened to democracy, Rick?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe they need this guy, Basil, for the simple reason that nobody's really that familiar with him. You know, all the other names that I mentioned, the Eamon Ryans, the Helen McEntees, have a huge amount of baggage attached to them and very, very bad negative publicity when it comes to the Irish people. So maybe they've actually played as good a hand as they can play in Fine Gael by putting Harris forward here. I mean, as you say, he's only 37 years of age, but he has been a minister in the government of Ireland since 2016. So that's what, 8 years? So since he's been 29, he has been a government minister. He does have ministerial experience. He served as the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. And also he has been a TD or a Member of Parliament for Wicklow since 2011. So he does have a little bit of political mileage behind him, but he's been very much operating behind the scenes, or, you know, not at the forefront. But maybe actually that's what'll serve the party well, rather than fielding someone with great experience, because they don't have anybody with experience that has actually achieved anything positive. So maybe a fresh face is just what they need. And I'll take you up on that offer. We'll watch with interest whether or not he does get over the finishing line. And have you had a flutter on him, or are you going to put your money?
Not yet, and I fear it's going to be too late, the way they're saying the other candidates are going to melt away. I'm not sure that we're going to get any decent odds, certainly not the 6-1 that we got on George Galloway.
Yeah, you're still smiling about that one, aren't you? 2 weeks later, Basil got in on the action with the Galloway Rochdale victory early, and I think that's the key, isn't it? You study the form, and you put your bet early before the bookies start tightening down on the odds. But yeah, but take it from Baz. He is a betting man with a good track record of victories here, especially when it comes to backing electoral candidates. And he reckons if he thinks Simon Harris is nailed down for a victory, whether he bets on it or not, I think there's a very good chance of that one actually happening. So let's move over to the UK at the minute. And of course, last month, Basil, in February, there was a massive two-day hearing down at the Courts of Justice in London concerning Julian Assange. TNT were on the ground there. Massive amount of public awareness in that, massive amount of coverage in that trial. But since then, I think it was the 22nd of April, so we're a month later, Nothing at all has been done. The judges retired to deliberate on what they had been presented with and to decide whether he would be extradited or not. And this week, they've been talking about a plea deal being put forward that would result in Assange not being extradited across to America with a misdemeanor charge as well. Can you see him accepting that? Or do you think he's just so downtrodden and busted with the whole Belmarsh business, wants to see his family again, wants to see his children again? Do you think he would take that? Or do you think he'll stand, continue to fight on to clear his name completely?
Very good question. I would imagine in an ideal world, he'd like to see the case thrown out. Mm-hmm. The hearing last month at the Old Bailey, of course, was to decide whether or not he will be granted leave to appeal. So mm-hmm. the judges were not being asked to decide, is he mm-hmm. guilty of the charges brought by the Americans, just simply whether or not he should have a chance to argue his case again before a jury, because an appeal is effectively a complete retrial of the whole extradition process. And I've no idea why it's taking them so long to come to a decision like that. You know, the extradition treaty with the United States that Britain has, which is entirely one-sided, by the way, they can pull people out of the UK, but we can't do the same to Americans. But it does say that no one can be extradited for political reasons. Now, the sheer fact that this verdict is taking so long to come back from the judges, and indeed the fact now that the Department of Justice in the United States have entered into talks with Julian and his legal team, is itself evidence that this is political, right? Mm-hmm. So they've kind of undermined their case. It's, you know, why would the Department of Justice be getting involved in something like this? Doubtless under pressure from the State Department, who are themselves under pressure from the Australian government and other actors, if it wasn't for the fact it's political. So, I mean, it's difficult to know. I mean, I think Julian, for the sake of his health, would like, you know, out, obviously. But Assange's lawyer, Barry Pollock, has told the Wall Street Journal he sees no indication that the Department of Justice will take the deal. If the deal does happen, Assange would have the possibility of entering the plea remotely, which would spare him a trip to the United States, where he claims he fears for his life, and quite rightly so, because that dreadful oaf, Mike Pompeo, threatened to have him murdered.
Yeah, I mean, that was an open threat. That wasn't something that was really done behind closed doors, per se. I mean, like, it's public knowledge that he did that. And of course, America have provided assurances that if he does get extradited across to America and banged up in ADX Supermax prison in all living hell conditions, he said, don't worry, we will look after him. That's a bit like Ted Bundy telling a young female hitchhiker, don't worry, I'll look after you, love, until you get to your final destination. That's what comes into my mind. I wouldn't be placing too much weight on any promises coming from the American government. And the other thing is, too, you know, the question you asked, Basil, why is it taking them so long? I think what they're doing is, this is all more psychological torture that is being inflicted on Assange. Assange is being systematically tortured in a solitary confinement for more than a certain period of time. I think it's 14 days is termed as torture. And he has been locked up in Belmarsh for, what, 4 or 5 years under horrific solitary confinement conditions. His mind is probably absolutely turned to mush in that time. I know I couldn't, I don't think I could last that long in solitary. And if I was separated from my wife and my child, and I was losing my mind and watch whatever little life I had ebb away, you know, I don't care what anybody says. Until you're in that man's shoes, you can't judge whether or not he's doing the right or the wrong thing, taking a plea deal. Damn it, Basil, if it meant I could be reunited with my family and see fresh air again, give me a misdemeanor charge. I'll take it. Just get me the hell out of there. Or maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. I haven't been in his position. But if you try and put yourself into his shoes, it's understandable that he would either, no, I'm going to see this through to the end, one side, or to hell with this. I've suffered enough in years in Belmarsh, years in the Ecuadorian embassy. I've missed my kids growing up. To hell with it all. Let me out of this place and let me see them again. You can see it from both sides, can't you?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I would think he would like to get at least the result of the hearing last month before making up his mind. In other words, if the judges come back and say, yes, Julian, you have grounds for appeal. And what's more, we're going to let you out on bail. He might say, well, then I'm going to stay and fight to clear my name. On the other hand, if he isn't granted leave to appeal, well, then he would be probably very wise to get a plea deal if he possibly can. So very, very finely balanced, and nowhere online can one find out the real detail of who said what's to who. That's all sort of sub judice and confidential at the moment as to exactly what contacts there are between the United States and his lawyers.
Yeah, so one to watch. And I think those two judges were due to come back. Their deliberation period was supposed to be sometime in March. And I'm looking at the calendar now, it's the 22nd of March. So if they stick to that, you know, could be the end of next week before we hear anything back on their part, or it could drag on into April. I'm sure if they can drag this out, Basil, they will drag it out for maximum stress and maximum pressure to be put onto Assange, because that's just simply how they seem to be operating right now. Hopping across to our friend, Ursula von der Leyen, who is no stranger to a can of Bristow's hairspray and a hairdryer. She has told Finland to prepare the EU for war. Defence preparedness will be a main topic at the EU Leaders Summit. So von der Leyen, you know, she just does not let up. Whether or not she's doing dodgy deals allegedly with Pfizer, or she's banging the jungle drums, or, you know, getting interference in Italy's affairs or anything else, she's never too far away. Does she ever contribute anything positive to the EU? Has she ever said anything good? And ever said anything that you sat up and went, hey, I like that? Or is she just a, you know, a harbinger of doom for war?
One of the most abysmal people on the world stage, out of all the truly dreadful generation of so-called leaders that we have at the moment. Remember, she spent billions on those useless injections with questions about personal gain in the background as well. That all seems to have gone away. She is endlessly dressing up in the flags of foreign countries. Have you seen those bizarre yellow and blue outfits that she wears when supporting Ukraine? And of course, infamously, disgracefully projected the Israeli flag all over the European Commission headquarters building in Brussels. So the optics are very bad, the symbolism is dreadful, and the words that come out of her mouth are the worst. She's asked the former president of Finland to prepare a report on how to enhance Europe's civilian and defence preparedness. Here's this garbage. We know that Putin's ambition does not end in Ukraine. Really? How do we know that? Where's your evidence, Ursula? The whole rhetoric coming out of the European Council meeting in Brussels, which is the ministers, the first ministers of the European Union, is all about escalating towards war. Unfortunately, overnight, there have been missile strikes in Ukraine by Russia and vice versa. Russia is said to have hit Ukraine's largest dam. 700,000 people in Kiev are without power. This certainly doesn't help de-escalate tension, put it that way. So, you know, the Russians don't exactly do themselves any favours with that kind of action. It's a dreadful situation, and her rhetoric is only making it worse.
Yeah, this statement as well is the one that can do so much damage. This, we know that Putin's ambition does not end in Ukraine. That's the same rhetoric that Grant Shapps is parroting. It's the same rhetoric as Sunak's coming out with. It's the same rhetoric that Macron's coming out with. And of course, they're feeding that through to put fear into the citizens of their country. So, okay, well, if Ukraine falls, France could be next. And if France falls, you know, it's like almost like Hitler at the Eiffel Tower. He's looking over the English Channel at Blighty, and he's got his eyes on us next, as in Putin being in that position now. But that is not the case. Putin, you know, we know the reasons why he went into a special military operation 2 years ago in the eastern part of Ukraine. And, you know, there's been a huge unnecessary deaths ever since then. Any possibility of a peace plan was scuppered when Boris Johnson was dispatched over there right at the beginning of that conflict in February of 2022. And now we're dealing with the fallout that people like von der Leyen are still pushing this Putin wants to take over Europe myth that's frightening people and giving, trying to get the gullible to back the governments in whatever steps they take. And now it's just unfortunate that von der Leyen's got her beady eyes on Finland now and got her claws into Finland. We know his ambition doesn't end with their Finland defense preparedness. It's not just the military's concern. It's everyone's concern, she said. We have a lot to learn from Finland. It's a specific mindset. I believe we should adopt it more widely in the rest of Europe. So again, talking to the people of Finland as if she actually was their leader. The audacity of this woman, the brass neck of this woman, knows no limits, Basil.
No, it's appalling. I mean, Finland and Sweden were neutral countries. They weren't in NATO, and they enjoyed good bilateral relations with Russia. All that, unfortunately, has been completely scuppered. Very, very disappointing. Finally, today, Rick, the ICC, the International Criminal Court, not the International Court of Justice, the one that's sitting on its hands with respect to Gaza, although it rushed to indict Vladimir Putin. Andrew Cayley, the new chief of the ICC's Palestine probe, is, it turns out, a generous donor to the Conservative Party. And we know how deeply ensconced with the regime in Tel Aviv the Conservative Party are, so don't expect any indictments of the homicidal maniac Benjamin Netanyahu and his cohorts anytime soon. Seems like 40,000 dead isn't enough yet to promise.
Not yet, not enough. The blood, the appetite for blood has not yet been satiated. Basil, we're up to time in this one. Thank you so much for your contributions. We'll talk again on Monday. We've got to wrap this up. I'll be back at the other side of the news with Sarah Wilkinson and Trevor John. Don't go away. This is TNT, today's newsroom.